And over the last year, we talked a little bit to the students about that, but we never really got to anywhere. In May, the DPSA passed a resolution with more detail, and basically, and certainly so, I think, sort of basically told the faculty to address this issue seriously and sort of now. So, what I've summarized, studying this a lot, I looked at all the policies in 60 other schools, and just so that when we get going this fall, that's why I'm here, with the committee to look at this, we have the resources to look at this issue. It's a complicated issue, but we don't have to start from ground zero. We do have a policy, and there are 60 other policies out there in our peer group that you can look at the language and see how they address. Issues. So just a little bit of background. It is a very tricky agreement. It's human nature. There is a feeling you don't want to love to lease. There's issues, right to romance, right to free speech, and so on. So there are arguments that way. There are arguments about tagline overboard, that is this too far, and so on, that people are adults and they can basically have to do what they want. Anyway, it's a very complicated, but very extremely important issue. When I see in my office, things go wrong, okay? And we're talking about careers and so on. It's an extremely important issue. So, just to mention a couple of topics that come up in a typical university policy, you can sort of think of these as the part of a chart of a committee that I will talk about in 2 minutes. So you want to have a discussion about what are the power of your franchise, right? The student and a faculty member is a power of your franchise. Especially for undergraduates, we were talking about professors and students, we're talking about TAs, even undergraduate graders, okay, where there's a potential for conflict of interest. Should these be disclosed? How? To who? And half dozen policies out there targeting explicitly throughout all faculty and undergraduate relationships. What are the sanctions? What is the definition of professors? Obviously, if you're in my class or on your PhD advisor, obviously, she is a set of conflict of interest. But faculty members really is an influence, it's much bigger than that, often underestimated by faculty members. So that is an issue that policies should talk about. The policy should not be 20 pages long. It should be, say, a 3-pager in plain English that everybody can understand. Tendency to make these things long and complicated. And I'm thinking of chairs, department chairs will often have to deal with these things. They have so much on their plate. You have to respect their time and to make sure they understand the procedures, the processes that may be involved. So there's a real need to clean up the policy. Okay, so how are we going to do this? As I mentioned, the framework 2 years ago did not work. And the framework, as I said, started at the Senate committee, went to the Senate. Sure, there was consultation all along the way. But this issue was not owned by faculty, it was owned by all of us, students, faculty, and staff. And then the committee cannot be charged by me or any of the provost. That's too faculty centric, so to speak. I talked to the president about this, and he's very happy to, so to speak, whether you call it a task force or a commission or whatever, she will bless this committee and report to her. So it's only at that level that I think we can make progress. Another way that we can make progress is not to have a policy. Policy. The university has a policy library, and some of those in there may be familiar with 6.4, deals with harassment and bias and so on. The goal of this committee is to introduce a policy at that level, so it really has a sort of ring of official to it, okay, and also transcends just the fact that faculty clearly care a lot about this, as do you and all the constituencies should be involved. But it is a university-wide thing. culminating in the production of an official policy. Again, our cost of effort is good. Maybe not to brag about it, but at least if you get into that level, how to bring it forward into it before people pay attention. So, as I said, we want to continue to do this. And how is it? What will it look like? Well, it should have someone, not as consultants, but not aware of the media, someone from the university analysis office, that's the head lawyer, someone from human resources, someone from the Title IX office, someone from the graduate school, someone from the Dean of Students office. And of course, there's the students, right? So we're thinking roughly, we want 3 graduate students, 3 faculty, and 3 undergraduates. You can sort of think of the corresponding assemblies. So handing over those or producing those names for the committee. But then there's some groups that fall into the cracks of the committee, very important, like postdocs, for example, the employees assembly. Okay? They should certainly have a representative in this setting. And so also to the non-tenured faculty members and the many researchers. I mean, there's 1,600 tenured faculty, all those other groups I mentioned to you, they add up almost to the same number. So it has to be a very broad group. So I'm actually happy to talk about the overall issue, but I'm also interested in the process. Okay, and here's how I think it will work. It'll sort of be like town. In other words, the group will talk about things, step through some of these obvious topics that have to be discussed, and come up with, say, a rough draft or some ideas, say, maybe in 2 months. And then there'll be a period of public comments, and we'll use the web for that. But it'll be broken down into parts, and anybody will be able to express their opinion about that. Then there'll be probably a go back to the drawing boards phase, okay? And then some final whatever, okay? And then I think, like the calendar, each assembly will then vote on this. And the committee's recommendation, together with these votes, then goes to the president. A little bit vague on the end there, but something like that. Total transparency the whole way through. Every meeting will have minutes that are public. Comment on and see every step of the way what is happening. Because I think, if we look back 2 years ago, this did not happen. In the end, I think the essay and so on resulted, but this it can't be an end game thing, it has to be continual. We picked it up at people in the undergrads that will be on this committee. It's not something, it's not about what's your stance on this right now. It's much more open mindedness. So the committees to research, figure things out, assimilate what they learn, and then report to the larger community. So if we want faculty students who are of that persuasion, okay, we're going to look into a problem, try to figure it out, and then make proposals, and be responsive to what the community has to say. So, and also, and we're also busy to have a very flexible system of alternates or second alternates. It doesn't matter who trumps these meetings so much as they pay attention and then report back in their own way. So we're very interested in having undergraduates participate in this right from the start. There are faculty and undergraduate situations, but I think mostly, I think in terms of the TA, the age, the spacing, you know, TA undergraduates are important. Setting where we have to pay attention. So we'll look at this way of opening remarks for my talk period, and I, amongst you, somehow figure out, produce a list of the people who are interested in working on this. And I'm very happy to meet with them. If they're thinking about it or not sure, I'm very happy to meet them and to talk to people who might want to do this. I think we'd like to have those things sort of at the end of next week. I'm sort of thinking that's a really that's a big going first thing in October. So I'm going to target my meeting by the end of next week. If you send me an opportunity to make sure things get sent to the right place, unless the people who are kind of interested. And so like I said, I'm happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Dr. Kathleen. From the speakers, this is very good.
So, just a couple of notes that from the document. So, it seems like in the 80s, 30% of the undergrad students reported harassment, 38% of female grad students in 2016, 24% of male students. And then specifically, it sounded like there was 57.1% of female male students reported this harassment. So on top of that, we're now having the most open-titled investigations out of any other institution, department of education is looking into. But I was wondering how the harassment was traced to relationships and what that connection was. And then I heard Jacob. I'll just give back to you.
Okay, so and most universities have a harassment policy and a consensual relationship policy. They obviously intersect in many different for example, professor asked a student not on a date that could be perceived as harassment from day one. Or if the relationship goes someplace 3 years from now in retrospect, you may not know that it's consensual. So this is one of the complex aspects of this issue. So, people have suggested, like, well, why don't we just focus into 6.4 and harassment? Here's why you don't want to do that. There are a couple of reasons. First, I started thinking of the consensual relationships policy is harassment prevention. 90% of it is education and making people pay attention and planning, okay? And if you merge this into a gigantic 6.4, it gets lost. I want to be the policy library here it is at the top of it. Right, so that's one thing. Now, 6.4 has issues as well, and I'm sure that as we go along with the sexual relationship topic, and think especially about how it connects to harassment, I'm sure good suggestions will emerge on how to make that policy better.
Okay, that's awesome. I'm sure Professor Sherwin, I don't know if you studied him, amazing for this. Just basically talks about harassment policy and tends to score quite a bit. And so one of the other things, I don't know if this is necessarily a platform for discussion about specifics like just what I asked, maybe about it. But when it comes to the committee, it sounds like you want that committee established pretty quickly. So if everyone's comfortable with that, we can vote on this during the exact session today. If that's everyone here for now. And that would be 300 students, is that?
That changed with me, but it could be more than that. I think we maxed up on 3 slots. And now initially, when I said 333, and then there's other reasons, we're getting up close to 20 people, and it's pretty hard to schedule that. But I would say think about 3 slots, but think in terms of a buddy system or an alternate, where people think about it. So this is going to be.
Thank you. Hello, Jarvi. I just want to say thanks so much for coming and presenting this. My opinion is that this is probably one of the most important things that the student assembly can help with, and something that is really sensitive. So I want to thank you for coming and trusting us to handle this in a mature way. I know it's been on the topic for a couple of years, and so I'm really excited that we're actually going to start addressing this really, important topic. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, as an undergraduate, I'm really excited that you come to the student assembly. But as a member of the university assembly, I think that it's actually really important that they, like that entity, be or have like a really meaningful role in the process, because it's already a standing body of faculty, staff, students, and graduate students. And so I don't want to try to reinvent the wheel here, and that So I just wanted to put that on the table in a year and a half early way. And so I, you know, I'm happy to continue this discussion offline, but anyway, I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, so the UA team. So as I mentioned, I'm preparing to say something. So the point of one general policy speaks to all consensual relations where there's a power differential and that then involves stack. And other universities do that, have a separate policy for staff and students. Okay? And here are some of the reasons for that. First of all, if you tell me the one size fits virtually everything on campus, it gets long and complicated, you spend a lot of time on it, right? You need to do special cases about this. So it would, I think, be kind of a distraction. Plus, there's so many special aspects to faculty broad now, faculty student, that are very specific that don't apply to staff. So, and other universities separate this out, and here's how I think it will play out. I'll get to the mindset. But if you figure this out nicely, one can think of that as a model, and then you can fairly, in a straightforward fashion, tailor it to a special policy for staff, for non academic staff. On the UA thing, I don't know. To me, we need the president's, she can only at her level really give the committee enough attention to it. It'll accelerate the whole process to the highest level. In the end, I don't think who approves things or whatever. I don't think all the assignments I think probably would be a lot of UA to come in on this. I think it'll where the policy sits, as I mentioned, it's not going to sit in the handbook. It's not going to sit in the handbook. Everything's up to this question. I don't think it will sit in the handbook. I think it's going to come back. It's the 6.X, okay? And only when you put it at that high level, people sort of sit up and really pay attention. So, as I said, the end game, the approval in the game, I'm happy with everybody voting. If you have to go back up to the UA, there's some. Ongoing, that is, there'll be visits back to the calendar, visits back to the assemblies, and you have time reports and all that kind of stuff.
Next, Mr. Christmas is Dale.
Just a really small question. Once we have our three initial names, what about those three people that are meeting? Who would you like us to send those names to?
Send it to me, and I will work with Martha and find
Martha.
Joe.
Hi, thanks so much. I'm just going to reiterate kind of what Kate said about the necessity of the UA waiting on this. I'm just very curious about their committee, so this is your committee for the conceptual relationship. On fruition, like it would have gone to my committee, and it seems like this is just a really good attempt. Bypass a lot of what the university simply stands for. And so it's just a concern of mine, just to make sure like this isn't a habit that's going to start coming out of a lot of these major decisions, because that sort of leads to a lot of the question of why do we have this system of shared governance. It's a great response, I'm concerned that a lot of people have.
Okay, so let's keep talking about the UA. So let me just talk about that. Everything's up for grabs. So I'm supposed to say keep grads, undergrads, and then digitals, critical courses. Do you feel that, so we're asking the SA, the GPSA, and the EA, but for the EA, it's postdocs and researchers who happen to be under their government. Do you feel we should do more than that? Do you feel we should have the UA in there?
Well, it just makes me question why the University of Assembly exists and we continue to like create committees that bypass it. And so that's like a concern that I have, that I just don't want this to be a habit that administrations would continue to create like these ad hoc committees off the presidents of assembly, and then we're just going to force their governance at some point.
Would you feel so I'll talk to Martha about all these things, do you feel it'd be best if she asked the UA it's all about language? And announcements and getting people to pay attention to feel it would be better if we sort of instead of wanting to say this is my committee driver, I bless this thing that the UA is doing, because that's something we work with.
I mean, that's the purpose of shared governance, really. Everyone else, like, each assembly can directly report to the president, so these committees don't really make a lot of sense because it seems to be bypassing what, you know, shared governance has started at Cornell for. It does leave concern. It's just like, if we have the structures already in place and the institutions already in place, why aren't we utilizing them to do that?
Well, I can only speak from the fact they said it, and I guess the track record is the longest 2 years they've been doing that. And I can't speak for the other assemblies, everybody has a full intent. I just think that we have to do something this year. I really thank the TPSA for putting a sense of urgency in the team. And we're trying to respond to that as best as possible. But I'm also trying to shape this in a way I understand the UN concerns. Just how we phrase this, and I think that can come up.
Draft that you proposed, and in addition to it being pretty much like other, like member by member exactly in a mirror of the UA committee structure already, I think that there's actually something to be said for the power imbalance between faculty and students. And so I know that there are an equal number of faculty and students on the committee, but it says that the Office of the Dean of Faculty will maintain a website where meeting minutes, policy rough drafts, community comments are posted from start to finish. And so I just want to say that I really feel that in a case where, like, the whole problem is power imbalance, it seems like we want to task this to the assembly that has an equal number of faculty, undergraduates, graduates, and employees. Like, to me that seems obvious. I think that it's, like, I think it's really great that the faculty are trying to, like, take the initiative on this. And I don't think it should be student, I don't think it's a student led initiative either, which it was on the GPSA. I really feel like the proper forum where it kind of like exists is somewhere where everyone has an equal voice. And my opinion is that the UA is that place. So I really urge that to be kind of where most of the, you know, in the committee, but, you know, in the structure of the UA committees, and I think that that's really the best format to make sure that everyone's on board. So that's just my opinion, and thank you for listening.
Yeah, so I would say a couple of things. So one is, the most, so I think symmetry of 333 doesn't look better. I don't think it's interesting on the number, or, you know, I'm here X number of grad traffic issues, and I can find undergrad traffic issues and X and Y. I wouldn't think too worry too much about that. But also don't do it, I guess we both did. There's just the promise of having an ad hoc committee, but I don't think it deserves, there's no standing committee on consensual related matters. This is a fairly ad hoc committee. And so again, the UA folks here feel that we should really say this is an ad hoc committee of the UA, that's where.
Jesse? Hi, thanks for coming. I went to the document and I just want like a confirmation maybe something from three of us to help move forward to sentences. Because I very much support this and I guess the other a lot of us just are involved with the
council. It was 6 years ago that I'm kind of old.
Sorry, I asked for that. Okay. So I mean, like, a lot of this is already like conversations and small investment in forms. Like, okay, so if there's any ambiguity, we want to do more input, and then there are some other resources. So, like, I guess my only question is, like, who this white person is going to be, and, like, if you are looking for anyone to help set these new people, I'm glad to help, because that is a concern I have.
So, again, what we're talking about here is mostly the process. There are tons of issues that obviously might come up in the next few weeks. So, and you know, GPSA is filled, 14 is filled with interesting ideas, and they'll be looked at thoughtfully. So, I also, again, I'll just say that I thank the taking this and that is also a draft. I need a framework for us to go
forward. Thank you.
So with the newfound commentary about the UA, would you like to so with the new kind of commentary about the UA, would you like the Student Assembly to go ahead and select three Student Assembly members to join the committee, or would you like to bring it up to the UA?
Well, I think the main constituencies are faculty, by which I mean an undergrad grade or whatever, but the Senate, the SA, the teaching SA, have to supply names in their own way. They each do it differently, but they can supply the names. And I think the latest in the chat here, which I can support in terms of useful, is that we're headed for an ad hoc committee that's blessed by the president, which is under the auspices of the
So do you want us to staff three people for the students?
If anything is down low,
if there are any individuals here who are running in the elections in a couple of weeks, please sign the form that Representative Park has back there. Thank you. You still have to say thank you.
Next, we're going to go into presentations. Mara. While Mara sets up, I'm going to give the floor so that we can. We have an offer to have a solution.
So, in the past, as some of us
So we have had problems, a single problem with a member of the assembly and confidentiality. So I'm hoping that we don't have problems like that this year. Don't do it because now you're actually signing something. So this should prevent that. So I'm happy to answer any questions about the bylaw in general or about this particular kind of aspect of it. It's actually pretty big. I don't even remember doing this last time, but it's required in the charter. So we're going to do it.
And you gave bylaw?
So we're facing some technical difficulties right now, so we're going to go to another how this is presentation on part.
We'll come back today. For a long time. All right, so what else did to business of the day? Was the event constitutional amendment approval? Is that Gabe?
I just still find there's anything to my meetings.
Point of order. Because we read the presentation last week, and I think everyone's going to approve it, just to save Gabe's time, we go straight to a vote over it. I don't know, just an idea. Come on, talk to school,
Point of order, just a point of order. Document that you were sent today is an updated version of the charter. If you were following the discussion from last time, a logical thing today would be to motion to replace the contents of the old resolution with the updated charter that was passed out to you all at the beginning of the year. If you wanted to send it to look at that today, and then Dave probably wants to talk.
I make that motion.
I second that motion.
Okay.
So Omar just formally motioned to get rid of the Constitution Amendment that they proposed 2 weeks ago and replace it entirely with the new Constitution Amendment that was passed out to all of you today. This Constitution is updated and it should include the Charter for their events committee inside of it.
Okay. Does everyone get what's going on right now? Does everyone understand? Okay.
Okay.
Sam?
The only order I just made clear, we have to overlay all the documents that have updated the language of all the resolution to include the updated Constitution.
Motion to vote.
Second? Setting this up? So now we'll go into this discussion. All those motion to vote. Okay, we'll have to motion to vote. All those in favor? All those against? Oh, by the way, committee members, okay, yeah, committee members get, oh, never mind. By vote of 21-021, passes.
I'm still giving them on this. Okay. Yeah or no? Okay, so then I'll just motion to amend the agenda to remove Obama's updated Constitution. Okay, great. So on Monday, the Appropriations Committee met, and after deliberations lasting probably less than 20 seconds, we voted and we approved Obama's new Constitution. They spent a lot of time updating it. We actually, when we sent it to us, we sent it back to them because they didn't give us a we're taking out in May. And so we almost always defer to the judgment of guidelines funded organizations to update their government documents. It's something that I find, you know, that I think is important. And you know, yes, it should be the only thing to be in the case of like an emergency. So hopefully we can just kind of approve Alana's governing documents because we shouldn't be very contentious. You should just listen to them.
Did everyone get it?
No.
Have you got it?
Yeah.
I think sometimes.
Did you get it? So there really shouldn't, I mean, if you have anything really important to say, now would be a good time to bring it up. Otherwise, I'll make a motion to vote. I'm not doing that, but I will if anyone has anything to say. Okay, it seems like no one has anything to say. So I'm going to motion to vote.
We all in favor? Is this all about the name of approving the law constitution? All those against? Any abstentions? By a vote of 21-0-1, it passes. Thank you. Are the representatives from ISAG? We're going to be here in the state right now, so we'll go into this for the day. ISAG budget discussion. Sponsor. The resolution that we are discussing from a year ago was not in today's meeting packet 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. If you go back to last week's meeting packet, you should all have a copy.
Okay, so this is definitely going to be more confusing. So buckle your seatbelts. Okay, so does everyone have the resolution that was presented last week, but we didn't get to? It's okay if you don't. I don't have it. But I might have it. It was 40 from academic year 2015-2016.
It's resolution number 40.
Okay. So, wow, okay. So this resolution was passed by the student assembly about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. And it basically was to get rid of the student assembly's budget surplus. And so I just kind of wanted to make sure we could talk about this because essentially I have asked, like, in my request to the Appropriations Committee, I basically tried to request that we eliminate our budget surplus. So I just kind of wanted to have a brief discussion with everyone and keep everyone on the same page.
The mic just went off.
Okay. I will use the mic. Okay, so this resolution was passed in, what is this, April? No, March. So this resolution was passed in March of 2016 by the Student Assembly, not last year, but the year before. And it was an attempt to run down the budget surplus. Basically, the SAA has more money than it spends. It spends less money than it has, and it does that every year, year after year. That will create, you know, run a budget surplus, you will eventually create a rollover fund. And so 2 years ago, the SAA had a rollover fund equal to about $40,000. That's at 39, that you see on line 11. We passed this resolution. This resolution was passed by the Student Assembly. But as it stands, I'm pretty sure that we only spent $9,000 of that $39,000 that we allocated. That $9,000 went into the Students Helping Students Fund. And the other $30,000 just like nothing, it's still there. This is because everything on lines 13 through 26 never happened, like that never happened, like those programs don't exist. And then same with 28 through 31, and then also I believe 36 through 38. So all of that money was never appropriated because those programs just like never ended up existing. And so we have $30,000, but it's been growing because like this was in March of 2016. So after fiscal year 2016 and fiscal year 2017, the rollover got bigger. That combined with the fact that we transferred like $55,000 from the Collegiate Leadership Program to the Student Assembly's budget, it means that we have like an operating income for this year of like $130,000. And so the question is, well, that's the question. It's more like I'm planning on reducing our surplus to zero in the next 2 to 4 years. That in part will depend on what the appropriations committee decides to fund the SAA. But I kind of want to keep everyone on the same page that these things are probably, they wouldn't happen if we did that, and then even if we didn't, they don't exist. So yeah, so I just want to keep everyone on the same page about this.
Point of information, do you need me to answer that question? Gabe, can you answer the question?
Yeah, Jesse, do you want to answer that?
Oh,
yes, they are still in the past. Social consultants are still a thing. They work with the Support Center for Health Initiatives with Jesse Bond, Bonnie Pearl. Yes, they are.
So I was wondering, out of all these other things and things, how many of these things are actually a thing? One. Two, do the Cornell Social Consultants, any of those knowledge, but do these other organizations need funds that we had allocated towards them that we never delivered on? And then the last thing that I would say was, what are your plans for, or have you thought about, or is this more of a forum for us getting our input on how we want to spend down the surplus? Or is this, or have you thought about
Okay, so I think, so first of all, it's great to know that the Cornell of Social Consultants is actually a thing. When I met with Gina a couple weeks ago, she said that they weren't a thing, so I trusted her. So I apologize for that. So My opinion about this is that everything that is in here that exists should get their funding first. Like, we owe all the organizations that we promised to fund the money before we cut out our surplus. I was concerned because I thought, well, I mean, it's true that some of these programs actually don't exist. So I guess it's mind-boggling why we would put money into those programs that don't exist. But I'm glad that the process consultants exist. So I will work to make sure that they get the money that they haven't gotten. So thanks for bringing it up. This is actually why I wanted to have this conversation, because you guys know more things than I can know. So in terms of the question, my plan is, is my belief that the student assembly should literally put its money where its mouth is and get rid of its surplus. Nobody would never permit another bond fund board to have a surplus the size that we do. Our surplus is depending on how you count, 6 to 8 times the size of our budget. That's insane. If an organization is $2,000 in surplus, we normally are you should get rid of that. This is ridiculous. And so it's a problem because there's a lot of turnover on the SA year after year. And so these problems get compounded along with the money. My opinion is that we should run down our surplus by requesting less money from the activity fee. And if that means living off our surplus for a couple of years, I think that's the right thing to do by students. I'm one person, and so if you have different opinions, this is a chance to air them. But in terms of what I think we have to do, anything that's on this document that hasn't received its funding should receive it first, and after that is where I think we should go.
Okay, Rhoda has another comment to that. Ask myself.
So I actually just spoke with Gina because the Blue Journey program is $1,000 surplus in there. So it's a very similar situation. And when I was speaking with her, basically she was like, just let the program run for another 2 years and then run out of funding and file and fund them after that. So in terms of not only that, but in terms of the larger assembly, I think we should have a similar concept.
Yeah, we have about 3 on speakers list, so we're going to limit speaking to 1 minute. I finally got a tablet, so it will be, And also, when you hear that, you can finish your sentence. But if someone else needs, if you want more time to speak, you can have someone else in motion to extend your speaking time. Next slide. 1 minute.
All right, so I'm glad that this has come through the assembly because I think a lot of us aren't aware that this was ever brought up. And this is something that I'm going to talk about when I give my presentation on HARP. But aside from these different initiatives, which I think is pretty cool, we do have a lot of money from the Clinton Leadership Program. And when we decided to give Annabelle $320,000, we cut into HARP's budget, and we cut it by 4. So we're essentially only getting 3/4 of what we should be getting every year in returns. So my thing is, please give the access money that is not going to these programs, which again, I think are very cool, to HARP. And we should, we could have this conversation more deeply when I present, but just get putting it on your radar right now.
Omar.
I do.
Okay, Sarah?
Gabe, just 2 questions. One, how much the total surplus? And also, 2, just to clarify, were you suggesting that we don't buy that fund ourselves until we spend the surplus, or that we just transfer it?
Those are really good questions. So our surplus depends on how you count. So it depends on how you count. So if you, I wish I was able to prepare the actual Excel spreadsheet, so I'll try to walk us through this as simply as possible. So the amount of money that we have sitting in our surplus account that comes from the amount of money that you don't spend from the activity fee is equal to approximately $50,000. That's about 2 years of spending for the students. About 2 years of spending. The collegiate leadership program transferred about $55,000 into the SAs. We put it in a special project administrative account, but it's technically just about freestanding money. So that's another $55,000 about.
A minute and a half?
You can check
it. You have a minute and a half?
If you include, so we're at about 105,000. So if you include the collegiate leadership program, so wait, does everyone know what the collegiate leadership program is? It's okay if you don't. Okay, so the collegiate leadership program is essentially a shell organization that technically the charter is managed by me. I don't want that, so I designated it to the room. And so it's been getting pipeline funding at like $6 per student. And because it has been spending all of its money, it's accumulated about $130,000 surplus. It has about $150,000 sitting in the account, and it's probably going to get another disbursement this year. So we have approximately $235,000 that we can spend. It's obviously the exact amount is in the Excel spreadsheet, and I'm happy to sit down and walk through that with people. You probably don't want that, but that's why I'm kind of having this meeting now. So we have about $230,000, but some of that money we're going to put towards actually funding the collegiate leadership program as initiated this year that Jeremy was talking about, like getting the Wall Street Journal. Some of it should be.
Okay, can you speak a little bit faster?
Yes. I'm trying to speak as clearly as I possibly can. That's why I'm speaking slowly. I'm sorry. Okay, so I'll start speaking more quickly. The problem is that my thoughts move much more slowly than my words. Okay. So we have about $230,000 in discretionary spending. I'm proposing, I've already proposed this to the Appropriations Committee, that we should use the money, we should give off our surplus for as long as we can, cut the SA by as much as we're allowed to. And my reason is because I think that's the right thing to do. That's basically the amount of money that we have.
So are you changing the bottom line of the proposed budget to zero?
No, I requested $1.90 at the request of the executive committee, but I think that I've asked the appropriations committee to like please cut us.
Thank you. Child?
So when this resolution presented, we didn't have the first generation student union. So where it says that that some of the $15,000 that currently support underserved resource centers, we're still applying for a resource center, so we don't have money for that. But right now we do have the first generation union that saved money and send that money to a first generation student. So how can we get that money?
So I definitely think that it's important that first generation student union get funding. But it doesn't say in here that that's what we would be funding. And so as much as I think it's rough, it's a good thing to fund. My opinion is honestly that we should take the surplus that we have and try to live off that for as long as possible to run it down. And the only things that we should actually spend the money on are the things explicitly laid out in the resolution. I don't think it's fair to kind of like say, we should, the money was going to a pilot program, happened, so let's, you know, put it somewhere that's kind of similar to that. It was for a specific program that never happened.
I don't know if you have a program what happened to that, but it does clearly say that things like resources to address issues that pertain to first generation students, and there are issues that pertain to first generation students on campus, and we need the money, and as first generation rep, I'm asking you to be a audience, where do you go to get that money, and what channels can we build to get some of the surplus, because we do have a lot of programs under first generation student union that need the money to operate. We have a mentorship program, we have a professional development program, and yeah, so.
So the procedure would be you would write a resolution, and in that resolution you would want to say the SA has a surplus of X amount and we would like to spend it on this. Again, you know, also mention students with disabilities and veterans, and like very clearly wasn't just for first generation students. Okay. But again, my point is we should try to live off our surplus for as long as possible. And I don't think that coming up with new spending initiatives is necessarily the best thing to do. I think that we should put our money where our mouth is, so that we didn't spend this money, and it's, you know, it's time to give off the surplus.
Thank you. Sam? Hello?
I think this massive surplus is a monument to the inefficiency of this system. The fact that we have $230,000 unspent is pretty heinous. I don't think moving off the surplus is the right thing to do. It's the easy thing to do. I think the right thing to do is to find out the people on the students who actually need that. If the first generation student needs, because I've tried to talk to you about getting a material subsidy for AAP and I haven't been able to make this sounding. I really appreciate that. I want it to be really used in a lot of really great places. And so I would personally prefer to put that into the great need of a lot of students here for now. In my personal opinion, our classes are inappropriate because people have access to more money when they buy materials and they get better grades. That's not something that can happen. We have $230,000 to spend. We should put that in places like that. Chris?
Going directly off what Alex said, I think just living off the surface of your past year, and I guess the money the university saves is different than data might be used for other causes, but we have no control over that whatsoever. So I think it would just be much more effective for us to use the money for other causes, like you know, which Jay was working on, or after working on it. The international students also want to create a research center. I think there's a lot of minorities on campus, and also other groups have great issues with the fund. But yeah. Living on the surface with just like plays and stereotype of the student center doesn't get anything done and just sits around. I think that having such a huge surplus, it's a huge opportunity to find all kinds of great initiatives we should spend on that. We should just go down the whole life on whatever comes up with the first project. We should put a lot of thought into this. I think we should definitely take advantage of the surface. I think like anything else is just extremely passive and unfortunate through what we have.
I'm gonna skip ahead to a community member, Julia. Welcome back.
Okay, so I'm back, surprised. But I guess what I wanted to bring up is a little bit of context. I think one of the hardest things about being on the student assembly is you get here, you're here for 4 years. Some of us, like myself, only on the assembly until I'm a senior. So sometimes we don't have kind of the back knowledge as to you know how these things are happening. And so I wanna just kind of highlight what everyone's been saying as to like we should spend this money on like lots of different student issues because a lot of these things that we foundation and building up for years. And we kind of push for people to get funding in lots of other ways. And I think we saw the success of the special projects funding last year for so many great types of came to us and received funding. When we made that public, we were able to show people very publicly that there was more money that they could have apply to. And I think that that's part of the context of what we need to do. Because, you know, in the past we've discussed getting iPads or something for the essay. Like, that was an actual thing. There was an actual resolution to buy the whole essay and have, like, you know, like, so when you think about it, like, I think I understand where you're coming from. It's fine to just live off the surplus because it's easier than coming up with BS and iPads. But the fact of the matter is every time that we have publicly said, here is money, you can use it, we have had the communities that need that money come to us and use the money. So I think it was lazy to just on that and go toward, like, not making that money more publicly available. And I think it would be a disservice to the communities that need a lot of this money. And I think basically what the effort should be is just to make that more public.
Next is TJ.
So I began echoing the same sentiments that were brought up several times, and we should try to, like, get this money to facilitate, like, programs that your constituencies actually, like, need and can use. That being said, I also think that a portion of our over $200,000 surplus should remain as a surplus. And I think it would be fiscally responsible as an assembly to have some sort of surplus. Because I don't know, we can assume that, like, hopefully the initiation can help us get additional funding, because, like, something really extreme will pop up in the future. I do think it's appropriate to save some of that funding for future surplus, so that if we have an initiative that we funding for it, it's not looking for, we can do so. So I hope that's a consideration that's also being put out in the future.
While they're setting up, this was a really productive discussion, but I think the only thing we're going to actually have a tangible impact on this surplus is if we take this discussion offline. So similar to how we had a planning meeting last week, I'm urging people to go to a spending meeting just so we can actually have a tangible discussion. This is how much funding we have, this is how much we can spend it on the resources, whether it's special projects or something, or the first generation student union, something like that. So if anyone wants to make a comment on that.
Yeah, can I comment real quick for information, I guess?
Is there any way we can get the essay to have a requirement that we have to come up with, like, a solution or a resolution about this, like, a month or a month and a half thing? Because I think I agree that we need to have one conversation about it, an ad hoc meeting or something, because there are a lot of things that need to go, but I don't want it to just have to push it off and then nothing ever comes. I think I could have a comment about it.
Okay, so I have a question. Why can all this money just be pushed into the special funds?
So it could, but that's why we should have this solution online, because we can recommend it right now, and it's actually going to happen. So is there a community member that wants to speak?
I'm just hearing that talk, and the thought that came to mind first for me was, just because you have money doesn't necessarily mean that you have to spend it immediately, right? And so I think that if you continuously go, like, oh, we have money, that means we have to spend it, then you could potentially start spending it previously or institute new programs that, once this money's gone, have a new program that requires cost, you don't have money in the future, which could cause problems in the long term. So I would, in my opinion, think it'd be best to either find a way to invest money where it can then produce returns for the student assembly, which can buy it into the future, or to find short-term investments. So something where it's a one-time cost they need to get done, that can then provide benefits for the future. Instead of simply saying that we have no money to spend it, try to find something that can work towards long-term goal because we have the money now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the comment. Just so some of the members are aware, the infrastructure fund and the special purpose funds are very interest bearing accounts, so that's something we fund. Okay, students help with students, not special funds.
Hello, my name is Mark Peralta. I'm a first year. I'm just investing in long term and short term. A lot of organizations, personally, that I think would actually go out of the way and invest in funding would pay off long term because I'm funding the start of these organizations. Personally, I'm a first generation student, so I have products to, money. First gen, but also other people like LGBT people, first gen, international students, transgender students, all those people that don't have a lot of resources that are offered to minority students. I think that would be a great thing. Those students would be great things. But then there's the money. Yeah, I don't think that a lot of these organizations would keep on single funding because it's just starting to make money. So that's a lot of things.
Thank you. So before we head to ISU, we'll be creating an ad hoc committee for this discussion. We can talk about it if we have time. Otherwise, we'll send out an email after this.
So I'm Danielle, and this is Venus, and we're part of the advocacy team at ISU. And today we'll be representing international students. So something to be talking about is just what resources we need, and some issues that we've been facing, and maybe what the SA can do to help us. So resources as international students from a big organization that is the International Student Union, ISU. And so we have different teams, and one of them is to advocate for the issues faced by international students, especially when they're policy changing. Another team is funding, which we are by unfunded, so a lot of the we fund a lot of events that promote internationalism on campus. And for us to really promote events that have a diverse focus. And we also host our own cross-cultural events like the International Gala, which happens every summer, just to bring a whole community of diverse people to share cultures and traditions together. Another organization is the ISSO, the International Student and Scholars Office, which is more logistical and deals with visa issues or CPT, or just if anyone has any legal issues that they need help with, that's where they go to. And then there's like the Asian and the Asian American Resource Center and individual region-specific organizations, but those are more for people to find people with a similar background just to find a place where they can share like members of all those stuff. So one resource that we've been proposing just over the last semester and continuing to do so this semester is the International Student Resource Center, because we feel like that's something that's been strongly backed by a lot of international students. And it's basically going to be, we're proposing that it's a physical space where students can exchange a diverse ideas and exchange experiences, because right now we feel like there needs events around campus which can facilitate those, but those are just one-time events. We need a physical space where we can all come together to have that platform. And it's also going to be an area where people can voice concerns, because a lot of times people don't know who to go to. They only have someone they know in ISU, or they go to the ISSO, but that's all logistical, so they're not sure if that's where they need to go to raise an issue that they might face because of policy changes and such. So that's going to be, and just some other things that are more international student focused, like career guidance or peer mentorship that targets more specifically international students.
So currently we're facing quite a few issues. One being there's been no follow up on CPT. Last year, the econ department stopped offering CPT for econ students, and they told us that transferred to the College of Arts and Science, and they would take care of CPT for
econ students, but there's been no follow-up action on that. We don't know if econ students can go to college or if they can still go to the econ. So as of now, econ students cannot receive the team. Another issue is the financial aid policy, which was changed a year ago. It changed from being blind to being aware, and as of yet, there's still a very, very advanced decision because it is promoting the benefits of more richer international students, which we think is against our now model of any person in the study. And it's very, very against any economic diversity in the school. And just generally, taking into consideration CPT and the financial aid policy, and just recently work study for international students stopped being offered, we feel like as an international community, we feel very marginalized. That anytime anything happens, we're the first to go on the books. And anything that our resources, our funding, that gets offers. And so we also feel like in relation to that, there's just a lack of communication between the student body and the administration. As in all of these decisions, they just make the decisions without involving anyone from the international student community. And most of the time, the decisions they make are not anything that we support. So we'd really like to improve on that communication between the administration and us. Also, we're just really thankful to the student assembly for giving us a voice, giving us a platform where we can share our concerns. But we do feel like every time we come here, it doesn't really amount to anything. And most of the time, we just tell our concerns, and people are like, okay, but a lot of the time, the administration don't show up to these meetings, making the decisions don't show up. So we end up telling our concerns to the wrong people, thus no action is needed. So we also like some improvement on that part. Also, as Danielle mentioned, we've got an international student resource center. We feel like there's a women's resource center, there's an Asian and Asian American resource center, but there's nothing really for the entire international community. Then we are just about a member of the community as domestic students, so we really appreciate your support with this proposal. And give it a question or two concerns.
Before I go to the speakers, that's one of the comment and Venus actually skipped I'm actually talking around the faculty of Vice President Gavardi about the National Resource Center. We're thinking about, nothing's in stone yet, but there are talks going on about, there's something like a new master housing plan on board. We're hoping to find space for that. Nothing's in stone, but we're going to talk to you. I'll pitch you. Very good.
Thank you for presenting, guys. This was, we have been issues with international students, and not all of us are that aware of the issues. But so one thing regarding our circumstances. So with CPT, I know last year I was in a conversation with Tyler Johnson, among other people. So from what they had said last year, obviously it's New Year's, so I'm glad that we brought this back up. Who would be the individual in ISU that would be in contact with or addressing this issue, or is that the advocacy team working on this issue itself? I would love to have a question.
I think Chris is going to be working on it along with Kiara, who's the VP of advocacy on our team. So I think we'll be working on the team.
Okay, awesome. And then, so the second thing is, John and I met with VJ last week. And so one of the things that we really stressed in was the idea of ensuring that the people that are the administrators that have the power, that have played a role in all the issues that you addressed today, when we do have those discussions, that they actually appear before us. And that's something that we continue to stress with VJ, and especially with Vice President Marty as well. And then the last thing is, Chris has definitely played an incredible role in terms of communications with the team from the ISU to the student assembly. Is there anything else that you wish you could do better in terms of our communications to ensure that we are continuously working with you?
I think making sure that those meetings, the monthly meetings with ISU and the administration actually happen. it's not just a meeting where they just talk and nothing comes out of it. It would really like that our voice is heard and that change actually happens on campus.
Okay. That's Chris.
Thanks so much to Lisa Daniel for coming and presenting. It was really valuable and learned something from the contest. I just want to drive home a couple of key points I made. International students are the only constituency on campus to face formalized discrimination. They're the only constituency on campus which does not have uniform financial aid conditions. They're the only constituency that cannot be applied for financial aid if they face like economic crisis. So let's say an international student comes here, family is well funded, but for some reason their business goes bankrupt, parents can't pay anymore, they are not allowed to move on financial aid. It's a huge problem and something I intend to work on. And then Venus brought up there's going to be a monthly like international business committee that will be nice purpose of international business sets with representatives from various international constituencies. So that's great, and again, as I was going to say, we won't just be symbolic, but that will actually get policy proposals, certainly if you're not just looking for the finance of the administration, but also some basic communications, really not much needed. But yeah, thanks so much again for presenting, and I hope everyone learned something.
The Associate Dean of Faculty, Christian Group.
Hi, thank you. Appreciate the associate dean with faculty, and I just wanted to feedback and clarify a couple of things about the CPT issue. So this came up last year. Laura Spitz initiated a committee which actually served on to help evaluate CPT issues across campus. And that committee made some recommendations, and I think interim measures were put in last year in the economics department. My understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I talked with Laura recently about this, but my understanding is that recommendations to that committee are working their way through, and the plan is to implement those in a way that would enable honest compliance of CPT for international students to be able to make. That was certainly the recommendation. There's limits to what content or qualifies for CPT, but within those limits, then this would be something. So I would be, and I discussed this better, but my name is probably in a very interesting here. Why it is you believe this economics thing is still not moving forward?
So I'm actually in the econ department, and I just did the CPT for my summer. So from my understanding, is that from what I went through, is that they were very strict in all the processes that we had to go through to make sure that it was relevant to economics, and there were lots of documentation that went on. So, I mean, I haven't asked someone in the administration this semester about CPT, but from their website, it says that no more CPT is going to be allowed for 2018 summer. That's what the website currently states. And we haven't heard of anything that has changed that, that starts.
Just to speak to that, I do think there is something that is moving forward, and I'll go check and try to make sure that this. It's silly for us to keep readdressing and get money committees to keep doing making the exact same recommendations. So I think we took a very solid look at this last year when we were planning to go forward, and I think that we should be on track to.
I guess the thing would be the communication, because we didn't know that this was happening, and it would be great if we did know. Because then the econ students wouldn't be as worried about their summers. Because it is a time for people to start applying for internships, and knowing if they have CPT is important right now. So I guess a faster decision needs to be made, and also communication has to be made.
Thank you. We have limited time because we have to do a large presentation, but I'm just going to go down the rest of the speakers as well, people. Next is Joe.
Thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it. I think a lot of members of the assembly appreciate it. I don't know, coming to the assembly is always the best, and also we can't just expect everyone to come. We also have to go out and make support. Like, it's a two-way street constituents. We go out and also come to the last day, it's a two-way street. So I want to continue to encourage people to come out, go out to constituents. I think it's really, really important. Second of all, I think we can raise a lot of issues, and I think it's just the assembly needs to be more proactive. A lot of issues that feel like every time. Students are all really reactionary to it. CPT, the administration does something, administration does something for looking at. I think it's around the time that we need to start going a little bit more proactively and more on the defensive side, obviously, making sure that we're getting these conversations before the cause, because I think it causes a lot of crisis when you're like, oh, we're putting on a student employment program. And it's like, then students have to react and they spend time.
Next is Alan.
Hey guys, how's it going? Has there been a date set or anything on the regular meetings with Lois Vincent? Maybe you also know, is there a date set for this month? Question number one. And it would suit the dean, thank you for coming. I think that was a good example of the problem that the students that you guys are serving didn't even know what you were doing. It'd be great if this what's his name? Dean Chen. Hey, thanks for coming. I think this was a good example of an issue. You know, the students that you guys are serving don't know that you guys are working on the scenes. It'd be great to have an international student on that committee so that they can just serve as a communicative individual. That'd be excellent. But also, if there has been a data set that any of those things, also curious about that.
Yeah, thank you. It was international. It's been on the committee. Last year, it was some of that information is perhaps lost.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Well, please, it's good to hear.
Ira?
I'll also
clear.
Hi, thank you so much for your presentation. I think you highlighted a lot of issues that many students at the assembly are aware of. And I'm glad that you're here because I understand that when you're dealing with administration, a lot of the time you get meetings, you know, a month, it's ahead for like in the future, and replies aren't as timely as you'd like, right? But you have an incredible international students' names on, and you have representatives on the topic like myself and like others would advocate for you, and if you come to this, obviously, going off the fact that a lot of the times your questions aren't answered, the great thing about this assembly is that we can pass resolutions that go directly to the president and she needs to respond. Right? So, there's value in that, and I think our relationship going into the future and trying to be more proactive can be really beneficial for those parties.
So Chris brought up the idea that international students can create a popular fund and enjoy it. That's something that we started working on really late in the summer, so before the school this year everything started. And so one of the things that I want to stress to people is we were in contact with administrators. Like people didn't reply to emails, like on the assembly, people didn't reply to emails. Like get an email, and there's an important issue that needs to be addressed, like fucking reply to the emails, otherwise nothing's going to happen. Okay.
And if there are no future reference, please respect the person. Last but not least, is Chris.
Okay, I think first off, I forgot to just mention thanks to all of you for your support on the MSF issue, and also a lot of other institutions, not like the blogs. Susan, who's been supporting on this, and also we're like very active in Western Lois Fitzgerald's review. So thank you for that. I don't want to continue. And then we have like more information from Susan. As I said, the meeting with Lois Fitzgerald today is not on set. I'm having a meeting with her and her VP on Friday. I sent the list of proposed members. We'll hopefully set a date on Friday for sometime later this month. So, yeah. And then finally, the reason international students are concerned about issues like CPT, even though the faculty is working on that, is that oftentimes when the changes in administrative policy that have a negative effect on international students only happen when there's huge mobilization from the international student community and huge awareness campaign that brings like American students and domestic students on board as well. Because I mean, if you look at the lead documents from last semester, one of the reasons why the university is going to take the best action against international students. One of the reasons the administration feels they can take the best action against international students is because they don't hear much about the public math as the kids, but we just concentrate on this 10% of students, and you are people aren't going to really worry about it too much. So that's a concern. I think research has to be more proactive and clear communication. And I hope that the monthly meetings with the Laura can accomplish something in that way, and close the population will be safe as well. So thanks again for presenting, and thanks to all the assembly members for supporting us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, while Myra sets up, Travis, did you have an announcement for?
Hello, you guys. Just to update you all on updates in regards to the fall election. So we have 20 first year students running for the freshman representative. We have an uncontested race for transfer representative. And the paperwork also has to become official, but we also have an uncontested race for LGBTQ plus liaison. Because of what is stated in the student assembly bylaws, he actually will be appointed as soon as possible to the PSA, and he will not have to wait until the end of the fall elections to be sitting with us. So next meeting, Ian Wallace, our LGBTQ plus liaison at large, will be sitting on the student
assembly. Ian, would you like to take a seat now because your election is a special election?
Okay, Travis, everyone who loves Travis, you are very welcome. And now we have Lara.
Finally, I'm waiting for you to answer this. So this presentation of the financial review committee comes partly because as a body, a lot of us don't know what's going on in other people's committees. And I think we need to be more transparent with that. Also, the financial review committee is a partnership between the Office of Financial Aid, Student Employment, and the Student Assembly, and we delegate a lot of funds that help students of high need, and this is something, basic things that we need to know about FARC, the history of FARC, and our resources. All right, so the financial aid committee funds, it's there. We have two main funds. One is Students Helping Students. So Students Helping Students essentially gives money to students who come to the Office of Financial Aid with emergency needs, emergency funds, medical funds and travel expenses and things like that. And then we have the Summer Experience Grant, which gives funds to students of high need who are working unpaid internships over the summer. So that's basically both. And the histories of both go many decades into the past. So Students Helping Students dates back to 1985. Prior to 2009, it was the Joint Assembly's Financial Aid Review Committee, and we only had Students Helping Students and not Summer Experience Grant. So there is no predetermined amount the committee is allowed to award. There's no annual cap. And something that people don't really know is that both funds are together. And we get approximately $70,000 from our returns. And on average, Students Helping Students gives around $15,000 per year. I think the max that we gave was about $20,000 in 2015 when the Traffic House fire happened and students lost a lot of their basic necessities and needed to find a reason housing and to buy clothes and things like that. And then I believe this past year was around 9,000. So next we have the summer experience grant. It has been defunded in the past. So there's history for that. It was directed 3 years ago. The first year, it was only available for arts and sciences students. And I believe 2016 was the first year that it was available to all STEM colleges. And I'll go into the nitty gritty and how many applications we got, how much we awarded later on in the presentation. Okay, so this is just essentially what we do, the nitty gritty. And I kind of want to read it out loud for you all because this was passing resolution. This is kind of set in stone. So the fund provides assistance to students with necessary emergency expenses incurred that cannot be funded by other means. Allowable expenses included but are not limited to travel expenses related to emergency situations like death of relative, extra basic living expenses needed due to fire, destruction of natural disaster, replacement of stolen goods, not lost due to negligence, and emergency medical or dental expenses not covered by insurance. And FARC, the way that we include grants is that students typically go to financial aid, they speak to a counselor, and the counselor lets them know about students helping students. This is typically the way that it works. And then they submit a request, a formal request, and completely anonymously, Gretchen Ryan, who's assistant director of financial aid, emails FARC, and then committee members then vote yes or no. Oftentimes it's yes, because it has gone through the process where financial aid counselors have approved that to go to work. Okay, so Students Helping Students Grant purpose is to provide students with opportunity to obtain career-related experience in the summer that is unpaid or minimally paid. Allowable expenses include but are not limited to housing, transportation, for food, work, and possibly awards. Prohibited usage of the summer experience grant includes but it's not limited to substitution for income, personal expenses, and transfer of funds to other students. And the max amount that people can get awarded is $3,000. So the application process is not extremely easy, but it's not that hard. So when you apply, there's there's an application that goes around. It's a couple slides on a Facebook event page that I set up and the financial aid website. It's reviewed by a college committee. I don't believe that students sit on these committees. It's essentially convened only by the college, and then it's sent to FARC. The names of the students remain anonymous. The names of the students are given to Gretchen Ryan. She rates them on a scale of 1 to 3, 3 being a student with the highest amount of need. And then the slate is then approved by FARC, and FARC also determines how much money we can allocate that for that semester. So in 2016, it was the first year available to all colleges. We got approximately 200 applications, and we awarded approximately $75,000. And that is because we had extra funds from the $9,000 that we discussed earlier in the resolution that was passed 2 years ago. Those funds were appropriated to summer experience grant for 2016. And for 2017, second year available to all colleges, we received 273 applications and we gave 31 students awards. The max amount that we gave out was $3,000 and the total amount awarded was $48,795. And that is because FARC had a discussion about essentially giving more money to the summer experience grant than we were
suggested to do so. So FARC wanted to give more money to SEG, even though the veterans had been pursued. Because we always want to have something to fall back on, essentially, that is usually around $20,000. So some history again, two main events that have lessened the impact that FARC can have was getting a pilot in 2009. We got off because of the financial crisis, and we wanted the extra burden on students, mainly because we were violent funded, and that increased the amount that people paid for when they paid for their student activity. Also, there was discussion, had between the FARC chair, community finance, and Gretchen Ryan at this time. And so Gretchen sent out a letter to community finance and to, I think, the rest of the student assembly, which said that essentially we wanted to get back on my line in the future, that we wouldn't need to collect 1,500 signatures. However, this past year, when I tried to have a conversation about getting back on my line, I was told that I needed to get 1,500 signatures. That was kind of impossible for me by myself, given that I didn't stand my own committee, and the committee members this past year weren't super dedicated to the committee, unfortunately. So, in 2 years ago, I believe, two assemblies ago, we voted to give Animal Flourishery $320,000. So that meant we lost a quarter of that for our endowment. So, basic math, we are getting three quarters of returns, so we could have, we could be getting more, but it's not.
So approximately how many slides do we have?
This is the last
one.
So looking into the future, so FARC will create a survey sent to students who were awarded the summer experience grant to ask about their summer experiences and suggestions to improve the application process, because we want to make it as easy as possible, as accessible as possible. And FARC will work on expanding communities that know about summer experience grant and students to increase applicants. Obviously, when we increase applicants, we essentially make it more competitive to get, because our funds, again, are stagnant. And FARC will draft a solution to facilitate getting on bottom line in the future. So, that's basically it. We don't have any questions. We have time for questions. Okay, that's it. Of course.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. All right, so with that, we will adjourn the meeting. Pass the question. All right, either Dale or John. Omar, we're going to do the executive session right outside. Guys, we're going to do the executive session right outside the panel, so you have any questions for Omar and Casa.
So we're going to have to move to our executive session now. We're going to go outside to have a sense of PowerPoint. If you could all please clean up your binders, and take them to the room before the binders, and they'll be outside. Try to see the room's works. Obviously, you'll have to start creating this.
Originally, I meant to make peace. Thank you.
We're not leaving yet. We're going outside to the patio for executive session.